Donc, j'essaie de me présenter un petit peu en français, même si mon niveau de français est vraiment basique parce que je n'ai jamais étudié français et j'ai passé en France seulement 5 mois. Donc, je suis en train d'apprendre un peu par osmose parce que je n'ai pas vraiment le temps d'étudier sérieusement. Et je suis italienne. J'ai, comme Jean-Michel a dit, mon parcours n'est pas lié à la production sonore, je ne suis pas un artiste. J'ai étudié lettres et après histoire de l'art à Bologne. Et après, j'ai fait un doctorat dans un département d'études cinématographiques. Mais mes recherches se sont très vite concentrées sur le son et initialement sur les rapports entre le son et l'espace dans les pratiques architecturales et artistiques. Et après, je me suis concentrée sur la promenade, sur la question de la mobilité dans l'espace urbain. Et je ne sais pas si vous avez vraiment des problèmes à suivre en anglais, parce que bon, l'anglais n'est pas ma langue maternelle, mais pour moi c'est vraiment plus facile parler en anglais. Donc vous avez ma façon de parler anglais est vraiment facile parce que je parle avec un accent italien très fort. Donc normalement pour les Français c'est plus facile de me suivre. Plutôt que suivre un anglais. Mais vous dites, sans ce problème, je, comme vous préférez, ou...
Moi, je me sens plus à l'aise.
Ok.
Si c'est l'anglais, c'est...
Oui, mais ce n'est pas pour créer une distance. C'est vraiment parce que mon niveau de français, comme c'est un peu... Donc, oui. Je passe à l'anglais et après, toutes les fois qu'il y a des questions, toutes les fois que vous voulez intervenir, c'est bienvenu. Et en fait, j'aimerais bien aussi utiliser cette occasion, cette invitation, pour partager avec vous une recherche qui n'est pas terminée encore, mais qui est en cours, qui est in process. Et d'échanger avec vous. Donc aussi de commencer un dialogue. Je ne voudrais pas créer une situation de distance ou hiérarchique. On dit ça en français ?
Hiérarchique,
oui. But oui, comme as I said, my current research project investigates the relationship between walking, listening, and sound making, especially in urban space. And this investigation actually stems from a wider interest in expanded sound, in listening, and in context on one side, and on the other side, on contextual, participatory, and ephemeral artistic practices. And also on the relationship between artistic practices and urban dynamics, sociocultural processes, and in general, the everyday sphere. This led me to explore themes, figures, and events that disclose a sort of performativity of the everyday, or that force or redefine the boundary between the aesthetic field and the everyday sphere. And walking for me is a sort of emblem, if you want, of everyday practices. And in my opinion, it can become also a sort of privileged site to map the expansion of art, of aesthetic practices into the field of sociocultural processes and of the everyday sphere. That's to map also the expansion of the practices and of the context of sound practice. Well, as you might know, walking has been really urban walking became a pervasive practice in visual art and literature since the beginning of the 20th century. starting from the Dadaist walks, the Dadaist guided tours in Paris, and then the Surrealist strolls, the Situationist in the 50s starting to make the Reeves, and then again walking became used as an aesthetic medium by many, many artists during the 60s and the 70s, so by the new avant-garde, and to arrive at the end to more recent example of artists who used walking as a principal medium of expression in their work, such as Francis Ellis, Gabriel Orozco, or the collective, the Italian collective Stalker. And well, in visual art, walking emerges as a sort of critical way of engaging the urban, subverting also and challenging the official representation of the city, and at the same time redefining artistic practices and artistic context. Well, many books, many exhibitions have focused on the practice of walking in visual art. And what I would like to do in my research project is sort of supplement this literature of walking in visual art with the perspective of listening. Why that? Because actually, since the 60s, walking has been a sort of means of expansion of field. This is an expression by the American art theorist Rosalind Krauss, used for the visual art, but to me, this happened also in the field of music and in the field of sound practice. So walking has been a means to expand sound practice, also for many composers, for many musicians, and for many of the artists who gave rise to sonic practices and to current what is now called sound art. And so they progressively came out of their studio and started to work directly in the urban sphere, in the urban context, and reappropriated in this way, reappropriating everyday reality as a material for their work, but also reappropriating everyday practices as an operational principle for their work. And so during this talk, I will try to explain why I think that walking, in my opinion, walking can be a relevant terrain to map this expansion. And I will show you also some example of aesthetic practices in the field of sound and music, peripatetic practices, to see how this expansion takes place. Is it okay? Can you follow? Sure. No, dites-moi si... Well, I, as I said, I would be happy to conceive a little bit this talk as a sort of dialogue, so really feel free to interrupt me and everywhere. If you have not only to ask questions, but also if you have comments, if your personal experiences to tell. And probably it would be nice to start... to have a little bit of dialogue. I would be curious to know if any of you have an interest in walking, not only in your artistic practice, but also in your everyday life, and or you have ideas about possible values of walking in urban space, experiences to share. If you like, I know that it's always difficult to break the ice, but I will be really. I think it would be really nice if we could also take the occasion to discuss together around the topic that for me is fundamental. Maybe it's not the same for you, I imagine. But well, if you have, comme vous voulez. J'imagine que vous préférez en français. Moi, je comprends, donc... Is there any walker among you?
oui, moi je sais que je marche, c'est pour aller chercher des sons, je vais souvent marcher et que ça fait partie de ma pratique. Mais ouais, je pense que ouais, c'est quelque chose qui m'intéresse.
Mm-hmm.
Je sais pas si je peux en dire vraiment plus.
Oui, donc pour toi, c'est plutôt une expérience qui est fondamentale pour ta pratique artistique plutôt qu'une pratique quotidienne. Bon, j'imagine que tu marches beaucoup aussi dans ta vie quotidienne, mais pour toi, cette pratique a une valeur plutôt dans la sphère de ton travail artistique.
Ouais, c'est plutôt que je vais aller chercher en marchant les sons que j'ai envie.
Donc pour toi, c'est une sorte d'exploration.
Oui, ouais, bah, je vais souvent faire des voyages et plein de choses comme ça. Ces voyages dans lesquels je vais chercher des sons. Je vais enregistrer, prendre des photos, je prends beaucoup de photos aussi. Et en fait, c'est souvent en marchant qu'on arrive à... Parce que justement, on peut sortir de tous les chemins qui sont déjà tracés et aller vers d'autres chemins et mm-hmm. parcourir d'autres types de paysages. Quoi.
Donc, réécrire les paysages, un peu.
Ouais, en quelque sorte. Mm-hmm.
Réinventer en cartographie.
Oui, oui, ouais, je sais pas si c'est les bons termes qui s'appliquent, mais c'est dans cette idée, ouais.
Dans votre recherche, vous parlez plus d'espace urbain.
Excusez.
Dans votre recherche, vous parlez plus d'espace urbain.
Oui.
Ou de marche en général.
Non, dans ma recherche spécifique, c'est plutôt sur l'espace urbain. Bon, je pense, bien sûr, il y a une très longue tradition d'études et aussi de création, surtout dans les milieux littéraires. Sur la marche dans the countryside, dans la campagne, on dit ça. Mais je pense qu'il y a des enjeux qui sont un peu différents. Et surtout dans les pratiques artistiques, je pense qu'il y a vraiment des dimensions différentes des recherches. Et bon, après. Oui, on va voir ensemble parce que pourquoi je me suis concentrée surtout sur l'espace urbain. Est-ce qu'il y a des autres promeneurs entre vous?
Mais après, en quelque sorte, comme une pratique artistique, moi je ne vois pas forcément ça comme ça. Enfin, je marche beaucoup et je fais pas mal de pèlerinages. Sur plusieurs jours, même longtemps, et après c'est une manière aussi de d'affiner son écoute. Enfin, voilà, c'est comme ça en tout cas.
Tu trouves que.
Du monde, mais genre 24 sur 24, quoi, parce qu'on est sans cesse dehors et forcément on est obligé d'entendre des choses.
Donc tu trouves, si on peut généraliser un peu, que la marche aide. Pour aider à, améliorer notre perception de l'espace, donner une perception plus directe de l'environnement.
Oui, voilà, c'est ça. Et pas dans le micro, c'est non, bah, un exemple tout bête, quand on est sous une capuche, quand il pleut, les sons ils sont beaucoup plus atténués, on entend les sons des gouttes qui tombent. Et oui, c'est une sorte de pièce sans fin, mais en perpétuelle évolution, puisqu'on est tout le temps en mouvement. Et il y a certaines matières qui vont s'interpénétrer.
Donc pour toi, la marche donne aussi un sens de temporalité à la perception.
Oui. Bah forcément, parce qu'on on avance, quoi.
C'est peut-être pour ça, d'ailleurs.
Non, mais tout de suite, ça pose. Non, c'est peut-être... Enfin, cette histoire de temporalité, de perception, il y a aussi, du coup, dans l'espace urbain, cette pratique-là, elle induit forcément une forme de ralentissement, quoi, qui peut être...
Ralentissement.
Bah de ralentissement, voilà. Et peut-être que que je sais pas, enfin du coup dans le rapport de la marche urbaine, enfin cette introduction là et cet appui là, il va peut-être dans le sens d'une certaine vitesse.
Oui,
contrario quoi, je sais pas.
Donc c'est comme la marche, je ne sais pas si j'ai bien compris ce que tu veux dire, mais la marche comme manière de, as a way to move without being fast, without the necessity of being fast and enjoying the environment. Yeah.
Après, d'un point de vue purement pratique, quand on marche en ville, en fait, on va plus vite que donc c'est pour mettre un peu les choses en perspective et relativiser sur ça. Quand on marche au centre-ville ou quand on utilise des moyens de déplacement qui sont pas les moyens de déplacement rapides, bah souvent on est plus rapide parce que étant donné qu'on n'est pas justement obligé de d'être dans le parcours de la ville quoi, et qu'on peut faire un peu ce qu'on veut, souvent on est plus rapide quoi, donc c'est marrant parce que on utilise un moyen de déplacement dit plus lent, mais au final on est plus rapide mm-hmm. pour aller d'un point A à un point B. Je sais pas si ça apporte quelque chose à la discussion, mais c'était voilà. Je viens de passer mon code de la route, donc ça me fait penser à ça.
Oui, oui. Donc vous voyez une sorte de dichotomie entre la marche et des autres typologies des mouvements, et notamment avec les means of transport. Ben bon, ça va, parce que you have already prefigured some of the ideas that we will try to discuss maybe also together later. So,
aussi,
ah non, oui, oui.
Aussi la marche à pied, je pense que c'est la meilleure manière en tout cas d'aller à la rencontre des sons du monde quoi, enfin parce que c'est là qu'on va se laisser surprendre dans ce mouvement, et il y a un moment, enfin pour celui qui pratique le field recording, c'est pas en restant assis qu'il va trouver ces sons là intéressants en tout cas, et c'est forcément en se déplaçant qu'il y a un moment va y avoir un son qui va être intéressant, et enfin c'est ouais peut-être en vélo peut-être quoi, mais enfin, voilà.
Oui.
Ouais, il y a le vent. Donc, ouais, je pense.
Oui, il y a une autre vitesse. Donc
pour
notre.
Pour appréhender ça, en tout cas, ça, cette matière sonore du monde, c'est qu'en étant en mouvement et par la marche à pied. Quoi.
Oui. Donc voilà. Tout. Oui, c'est. C'est une manière qui donne pour toi une relation plus proche avec l'environnement, mm-hmm. au niveau perceptif.
Après, on peut rester sur place. Je peux très bien aller place de, enfin là, m'asseoir au milieu des voitures, voilà. Ok, oui. Mais ça sera peut-être tout le temps le même flux entre guillemets, quoi.
Il n'y a pas de cloche.
Ouais.
Entre toi, les promeneurs et l'environnement, comme toi dans une voiture ou dans un train. Ou... Mm-hmm. Bon, il peut, oui. C'est bien, vous avez déjà as I said, prefigured some of the ideas that actually, well, to explain why I'm so interested in walking, and especially in walking in urban space, I need a little bit more of time, because I'm not the first one to be obsessed by walking in the city. In fact, since the beginning of the 20th century, many, many thinkers have focused on walking, and there is a very big interdisciplinary literature coming from social sciences, anthropology, urban studies, literature, philosophy, that has focused on this trivial, if you want, everyday practice of walking in the city. And what emerges from this literature, as you also already said, is that walking is not. It's not possible to consider walking only in functional terms. So as a way to move from one place to another in the most efficient way. Quite the opposite, most often. And walking is often interpreted as a sort of privileged way to establish a relationship with the environment, with the urban. And when I say urban, I don't mean only the architectural, the physical structure of the city, but also everyday practices, cultural practices, social processes, the public sphere, so all the layers that enter, that play, that have an important role in the urban life, not only in the urban structure. So most of this literature is like walking became a sort of synecdoche of everyday practices in general, and an emblem of our experience in urban space, a way to establish a relationship with the urban. And during my research, I tried to analyze this literature and also to find some recurring themes or recurrent perspective in order to understand a little bit how these relationships take place. And obviously, this perspective that I will try to show you are not in opposition one with the other, but are actually complementary in most of the cases, and often merge in the thought of different authors. One of the first themes that we can find is an interpretation of walking as a way to experience, to explore, to read and understand urban space and everyday life. So what you said before is really similar to this first quotation. Walking is the best way to explore and exploit the city, by the British writer Ian Sinclair. And you said something very similar just some minutes ago. Well, the origins of this idea are not recent. Actually, the prototype of the urban wanderer is the flaneur, which is a literary figure that emerged in literature in the 19th century, and especially in French literature with writers such as Charles Baudelaire. And well, the flaneur was a sort of intellectual who explored urban space without any purpose, without any aim, without any functionality, just immersing himself in the crowd and enjoying the everyday life of the city. So he is often described as a disinterested observer of city life. For example, Marie Grucdi says the flaneur's unique achievement was to pioneer a new way of seeing, experiencing and representing urban modernity that privileged the everyday perspective of the man of the street over the bird's eye view of the rationalist or the moralist. But observer and way of seeing is a key term here, because, the flaneur is really always described in terms of visuality, in terms of his gaze. And what is important is that the particular gaze of the flaneur is a gaze in movement. So Walter Benjamin has devoted many pages in his book Le Passage to the figure of the flaneur, and he described it as a landscape in the round, so a landscape in movement. He says the city can appear to someone walking through it to be without thresholds, a landscape in the round. So as if the act of walking in urban space could transform urban space in a continuous landscape, so in a temporal landscape rather than in an image, as if the act of walking could unify the different snapshots on the city and recompose them in a continuous landscape. It is not by chance that the visual practice of the flaneur has been often compared to cinema, so to this moving gaze, internal gaze. So, as was also mentioned, walking as a way of temporal interaction with the city, of that creates a way of perceiving city space which is processual and temporal, time-based. If the figure of the flaneur is primarily characterized by his visuality, many authors, on the contrary, underline how walking doesn't only imply the field of vision, our eyes, but actually involves the whole body and all our senses. So in this literature, walking is considered, first of all, as an embodied practice, allowing us to establish a physical relationship with the environment. For the French philosopher David Le Breton, in a book which is called L'éloge de la marche, donc, qui est vraiment dédié à la marche, il dit: la relation de l'homme qui marche à sa cité, à ses rues, à ses quartiers, qu'il les connaisse déjà ou les découvre au fil de ses pas, est d'abord une relation affective et une expérience corporelle. Enfin, sonore et visuel accompagne sa déambulation. Ça peut enregistrer les fluctuations de la température et réagit au contact des objets ou de l'espace. Il traverse des nappes d'odeurs pénibles et heureuses. L'expérience de la marche sollicite les corps en son entier. Elle est une mise en jeu constante du sens et des sens. Excusez, oui, désolé pour ma prononciation de cette très belle citation. Et, so, Le Breton calls understand walking as a sort of triumph of the body. Well, all our senses are solicited, are enlightened. This was also one of the lines that some of you mentioned in our previous little discussion. So, the walk as a way to enliven our senses. And the walk is a practice that stimulates our body and all our senses. Well, according to David Le Breton, the practice of walking actually, this way of this bodily relationship that the walking act establish, is also in some way counteracts the erosion of the importance of the body in the contemporary society. So the fact that our body are always less important for us since we have new means of transport, new form of mobility allowed by communication technologies. So for him, there is also a sort of dichotomy between the physical act of walking and the disembodied practices of traveling with an airplane or making a Skype call. Then this emphasis on the body is important for many writers. I put here a quotation by the Italian anthropologist Franco La Cecla, who says walking is a way to leave an imprint, to physically map the world with our own body, a body which faces many other bodies. So here we have also a little mention to the sociality of social urban space. And Rebecca Solnit again say, walking is how the body measures itself against the earth. So again, this bodily, embodied relationship. But walking can also be interpreted as a way, as a tactic of reappropriation and rewriting of the urban system. Also, you mentioned this dimension before at the beginning of our conversation. And this is particularly, again, many references are French. Michel Deschertot is among the most important writers who have underlined walking as a practice that allows us to reshape the urban system. There is a chapter in his book L'invention du quotidien, which is focused on the practice of walking. And it, so he devotes a chapter to the simple act of walking, and start by comparing the view of Manhattan from the top of the Twin Tower. That the book was published in 1980, so the two towers were still there. So he compares the view from above and the experience of the walker, that of the passerby that walked the city of the streets of Manhattan. And he establishes again a dichotomy between the view from the city from above and the experience of walking at street level, so from below. For De Certeau, the view from above is a voyeuristic view. It's an expression of a desire to understand, to comprehend, but also to control and dominate urban complexity. So the view from above imply an observer that view urban space and urban practices from a distance and that can control them, but who also has a sort of homogeneous view of what really happens in the city. So it perceives the city as an image, a distance, and it's unable, of course, to consider everyday uses, everyday practices. On the contrary, the walker actively participates in city life. His gaze is internal. His experience is embodied. So he participates in city life while walking in the street. But for De Certeau, walking also allows us to creatively reshape the urban system, to reappropriate the urban system designed by urban planners. So it is a way to write and rewrite urban space. He uses a linguistic metaphor. He says the walking act is to the urban system what the speech act is to language. It has a triple enunciative function. It is a process of appropriation of the topographical system in the part of the pedestrian. It is a spatial acting out of the place. And it implies relations among differentiated positions in the form of movements. So basically, a language set up a series of rules and interdiction. The language as an abstract system. But every time we speak, every time we write, we reappropriate that system and we decide if we want to follow that rule or transgress them. So every time we reappropriate the system in our own terms. The same happens with walking for De Certeau. So the urban planning set up a series of possibilities and a series of interdiction. And when we walk the city, we actually rewrite the abstract system that has been imposed on us. And this is particularly evident in practices such as the parkour, for example. Find way the parcours. Vous voyez, c'est le parcours. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Oui. That of course find ways moving, transgressing the limits that are imposed by the urban architecture, but is also evident in everyday practices such as walking in a park and. Through repetition, designing a meadow, un sentier. Then this linguistic metaphor comes back in many other theorists, such as Jean-François Augoyard, which is the founder of Cresson in Grenoble. In his first book, which is entitled Pas à Pas, he writes, walking resembles a reading writing. The succession of steps effectively rewrites the space that opens before the walker. So for Augoyard, again, walking is a process of reading, but also writing urban space. And while we read urban space, we also rewrite it as a structure. So in all this literature, walking becomes also a sort of form of resistance to the prearranged spaces designed by planners and imposed on us, or also a form of resistance to the city conceived as a functional body, as a functional unity.
Mm.
And then last one, last line of thought, which is walking as a way to participate in the public sphere and encounter urban otherness, which is a line of thought which is particularly recurrent in sociological studies, so yeah, in the field of social sciences. In this field, walking is often discussed in relationship with the right of access to public space and la différence, l'altérité, which is considered characteristic of city life and of the public sphere in city life. So here, the emphasis is placed on walking as a way to, as a form of participation in public space, and the city is considered mostly in terms of possibilities to encounter urban otherness, urban difference, in social terms. The street is interpreted as a platform for public life and also for for Fankula Ceca, for example, he says a city is a city insofar as its inhabitants, whatever they do and whatever their income is, can still meet accidentally in the street. So this possibility of exchange between different people on many layers in the street becomes a sort of metaphor for democracy, for equalitarianism. The street as a platform for this mixture that represent the richness of city life. For Rebecca Sordin, walking is also what help keeping to preserve the public nature of public space. So practicizing public space as a way to maintain this space public. She says walking through the street is what connects the individual microcosm with the public macrocosm. Walking in public spaces preserve their publicness and their viability. So we practice space, and in this way we preserve these possibilities that we have to share this space with the others. Of course, this is particularly true with regards to activist practices such as groups such as Reclaim the Street in England, for example, or critical mass that creates parades to reclaim the right to have public space and to be able to exploit the street. So to summarize a little bit, we could say that walking is understood as a platform for a constellation of different relational possibilities, which are not contradictory, but rather many times meet in the thought of the same author. And so to establish a relationship with the city in physical terms, in psychical terms, in sensorial terms, in social but also political terms. Jean-Paul Thibault condenses a lot of this idea in this sentence. Il dit: cette activité n'a de sens qu'à rapporter à ses entours et articuler aux situations qu'elle mobilise. C'est que marcher ne consiste pas tant à se déplacer dans la ville qu'à s'embarquer avec elle, avec les seaux sous les pieds, avec autrui à proximité, avec l'ambiance comme stimulant. So in this sentence, it sort of condenses many of the ideas that we have been exploring up to now. At the same time, walking is also characterized by the by its temporality. So the walker, the promener, become a sort of symbol of the mobility of the city itself, of all the physical and intangible transformation that always happen in the city and that always continuously redefine city space and practices. So the wonder in literature become really a sort of representation of the flux characterizing city space. What about sound? Some of you already started talking about sound. I don't know if this first exploration of some possible values of walking have you have something to say about that or questions?
About sound and walk?
We arrive now to that. Okay. Yeah, well... In my research, most of this literature on walking is actually characterized by a visual focus. And in my research, I would like to supplement this focus on visuality with the focus on listening. By considering listening as a way, as a practice that allows us to enter in relationship with our context and also to read, to perceive, but also to rewrite urban space. And also to suggest that walking and listening have something in common. Michael Bull has underlined it in several of his writings. He says sound and movement are closely related in the navigation of urban experience. And again, he says is movement is itself a potentially transformative activity, then moving to sound is doubly so. So he underlined a sort of relationality between walking and listening. Why that? But first of all, we could say that sound is a mobile figure par excellence. Jean-Luc Nancy says sound is first of all presence in the sense of a presence that is not a being, but rather a coming and a passing, an extending and a penetrating. So sound is transient, is in a constant state of transmission, displacement, dispersal. Sound itself is movement. It is always an event, or rather a constellation of event. So auditory knowledge emphasizes the movement and becoming of reality. Its connective and transitive process of appearance and disappearance. The geographer Paul Rodway say auditory geography is a time-space geography, a dynamic geography of events rather than images, or activity rather than scenes. So for the listening subject, the city is a continuous series of events which are in perpetual movement, in continuous movement, and that are all connected one with the other and with the listener, which is never external to what he listens to. So this omnidirectionality of sound and its temporal nature allows us to perceive the city as a becoming entity, an entity of event rather than scenes, an entity of activities rather than images. And so it gives us a sort of temporal and processual image of the city, always in movement with the listener. Then listening is also a relational, contextual, and embodied practice. The listening subject is always part of a vibrational process with the environment and with the other subjects. Sound materially is vibration. It's not an object. It is not an attribute of an object, but is generated by the relationship between objects and subjects. Therefore, the listening subject cannot have an external position, but always participate in the soundscape he listens to. So if you want, he reads and rewrites the soundscape he listens to. You cannot have an external listening position when you walk into the city, but you always participate in the creation of what you listen to. So we not only experience an acoustic space, but while listening, we also participate in the space. Again, Paul Radowitz says, the soundscape moves with the sentience as they move through the environment, and the continually changes with our behavioral interactions. So, listening puts the subject into vibration with the context and with the other subjects. It creates permeability between the subject and the context and establishes a relation between us and our sonic environment while we move through it. Our auditory context is not something that we can perceive, but we are immersed in it, and every our every action, every gesture actually changes the situation where we are, the situation that we perceive. We reshape the soundscape as much as the soundscape reshapes us. So, well, if walking is a way to establish an embodied relationship, a situated relationship, a bionivocal relation, a mutual relationship between subject and environment, in my opinion, this is true also for listening. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that if you have something to say about this, or if you have different ideas, or... And, well, Salomé Voguelan, that will be here tomorrow, in one of her book, the first book, Listening to Some Noises and Silence, she says that she compares listening with walking, and she says listening is not a receptive mode, but a method of exploration, a way of walking through the soundscape or the sound work. So this leads us also to the next guest that will be here with you, with us, because I will be here tomorrow again. I don't know if you would like to add something to this. No? So after this introduction, let's go to sound practices. Also because I have quite a lot of example to show you. And I will start by three practices, listening, recording, and sound making, so performing the environment. And then I will try to address specific walking figures, such as the tourist, the shopper, the military parade, the marching band, to see how these everyday practices are reappropriated by artists. We can start from listening, and really from the beginning. Because, probably the first time that an artist proposes us to listen while walking to our auditory situation is in a Futurist Manifesto by Luigi Russolo, The Art of Noise. I'm sure that you all know very well this little manifesto. And basically, Russolo invites us to walk urban streets with an ear more attentive than the eye. And they say, let's walk together to a great modern capital with the ear more attentive than the eye. And we will vary the pleasure of our sensibility by distinguishing among the gurgling of water, air, and gas inside metallic pipes, the rumblings and rattlings of engines grating with obvious animal spirits, the rising and falling of pistons, the stridency of mechanical saw, the loud jumping of trolleys on the rails, the snapping of wipes, the whipping of flags. We will have fun imagining our orchestration of department stores sliding doors, the hubbub of the crowds, the different rows of rail station, iron foundries, textile mills, printing houses, proper plants, and subways. So he invites us to listen to the city as it was a symphony, and also he start to suggest that the path that we take can become a sort of orchestration of the sound we hear. But actually, everything ends up in the concert hall. So Russolo built, as you know, a series of instruments called Intonarumori, every of which was meant to represent a specific sound, a specific urban sound. But these instruments were actually used in normal concert setting, in normal auditoriums and concert halls. I don't know if how many of you have already listened to Ritratto di Città, City Portrait? Are you curious to listen to a sound example, or you all know Russolo composition? Well, where? So here you have a picture of the Intona Rumori. Oh no, ne marche pas. Et pourquoi?
Yes.
Because normalement c'était. Ah oui, c'est parti. C'est le volume.
There's nothing.
Non, c'est pas parti. Mm-hmm. Parce que it was there, but.
Pas de commentaires, désolé Jean.
Well, we are at the very origins of noise music, if you want. But well, yeah, as I said, Russolo suggests us to walk the city and to try to orchestrate the sliding doors of supermarkets or the noises of the subway. But actually, everything hangs in the concert hall, and we are with Risveglio di Città, Reveil of the City, we are in front of a representation of urban life. As in the same way as Walter Ruttmann was representing a Berlin weekend in his work made in 1930, Weekend, Wochenende, where he, although he recorded with field recording the noises of the city, he was representing city life during the 2 days on one Saturday, from the end of the daily work on Friday to the beginning again of the daily work on Monday. But the suggestion of Russolo remains abstract and ends up in the field of representation. We have to wait the 60s to find some artists that will take Russolo's suggestion quite seriously. And this is a work by Philip Körner entitled I Can Walk Through the World as Music. And Philip Körner is an artist, an American artist affiliated with Fluxus and also a collaborator of the Jason Dance Theater Company in New York. Now he lives in a little city in Italy called Reggio Emilia. And this is a score which is dated 1987, but actually Körner told me that the first time he did this concert was in the middle 60s. In this year, he decided to follow Russolo's suggestion quite literally, leading the audience outside from the concert hall with the mere indication to listen to the existing sound like at the concert, so with the same intention. So listen to the urban sound as with the same attention that you would have in the concert hall. So here you have the score. It's not really possible to read it. Basically, this is a sort of a little representation of the concert hall. And here the artist will present, describe the way that the audience will take suggestions regarding walk speed or mind state. And then you have these lines that is a sort of representation of the path around the border where the concert was taking place. And here you have a quotation from L'arte dei rumori by Luigi Russolo. So Körner quotes Russolo directly as a source of inspiration, but at the same time, so as a source of inspiration for considering urban noise as music. But at the same time, he aims at expanding the experimentation made by Russolo by leading the audience outside of the concert hall to experience directly the sounds of the urban environment while walking. So without the mediation of any musical instrument, as the Intona Rumori by Russolo, but also without the mediation of an institutional setting, such as the theater. So at the same time, you want to expand also the introduction of noise into the concert hall by John Cage, notably with 4 minutes and 33 seconds. So if Cage silencing the music in 4 minutes and 33 seconds enlightened the background noise made by the audience by silencing the musical instrument, but remaining inside the institutional context of presentation and perception of music, so inside the concert hall, Körner want to go out from this institutional setting, getting rid of it, so expanding the context of music, proposing a sort of mobile auditorium, if you want, that depends only on the indication of the artist, on the request that the artist make to the audience to pay attention to the listening experience. Here you have a flyer. This is fun because here we made the same experience last year in Reggio Emilia, the city where he lives now. So it's a sort of reenactment of the piece that he made for the first time in the 60s. But another similar experience in the same year was made by Max Neuhaus, which I'm sure most of you know because, well, he is one of the most important artists in the field of sound art and sound installation. And as you know, he started also his career as a musician. He was a quite famous percussionist, a performer of new music composition by John Cage, Morton Feldman, or Stockhausen, Pierre Boulez, etc. But since 1966, he started to work on projects that were completely outside from the musical tradition. And we could say that it was trying to expand the musical tradition and redefine the boundaries of what could be considered as music. And until progressively, he actually ended up working more in the contemporary art system than in the music system. And it is interesting, from my perspective, that the first work that he did in this direction was based on walking, as if walking could become a sort of, material and also symbolic instrument to exit from the concert hall. The title of this work is Listen, and it's a series, Listen, written in capital letter as actually, so here I didn't wrote it in that way. And it's an invitation to listen outside from the concert hall. So it's really similar to the experience that Philip Cornett made in the same years. And it was a series of collective listening walks made by the artists in different cities in the United States. And the first one was led by the artist in 1966 in Manhattan. And he described it in this way: a rubber stamp listened on each person's hand and began walking with them down the 14th Street toward the East River. At that point, the street bisects a power plant. And as I had noticed previously, one year some spectacularly massive rumbling. We continued crossing the highway and walking along the sound on its tire wash, down the river for a few blocks, recrossing over a pedestrian bridge, passing through the Puerto Rican street life of the Lower East Side to my studio, where I performed some percussion pieces for them. After a while, I began to do this work as lecture demonstration. The rubber stamp was the lecture and the walk the demonstration. I would ask the audience at a concert or lecture to collect outside the hall, stamp their hands and lead them through their everyday environment. Saying nothing, I will simply concentrate on listening and start walking. At first, they would be a little embarrassed, of course, but the focus was generally contagious. The group would proceed silently, and by the time we returned to the hall, many had found a new way to listen for themselves. So, in this case, the stamp listen is what creates the condition for a focused listening. It creates the framework, the aesthetic framework, to experience the world around the listener with an aesthetic perspective, with a focused listening. It has the same function as the indication in a corner performance made in the same years. So it creates again a sort of mobile auditorium. So the aim of the artist was to expand, to force the boundary between artistic practice and everyday sphere in this case, going beyond the composer who had proposed recording of real noises in their compositions, such as Russolo, such as Varese, John Cage. He doesn't want to bring a noise into music, but he actually wants to bring the audience to listen to the noise outside. So there is a sort of reversal of the tradition composition using concrete sound, or but in the framework of a composition process. So both Neuhaus and Philip Körner renounce to creation. They renounce to create new sound or to compose musical materials, and to limit themselves to highlight the already existing sounds in the environment. Again, they work in an everyday context, so their exit from the concert hall is almost symbolical. And they involve the public in a guided listening tour, paving the way actually for a longer tradition of guided tour focused on walking, so sound walk that we will see in a while. And actually, another curious thing is that they aim to create effect not only during the aesthetic experience, not only during the walk, but also in our everyday life. So Max Neuhaus affirms it. He says, after this experience, the group would found new way to listen for themselves, as if the experience organized by the artist could change our perceptive modalities in our everyday life also. For example, he made a series of ephemera as part of the project Listen. This one is a simple postcard with only the indication Listen. And this one was a poster instead. You have the Brooklyn Bridge with the writing Listen. The Brooklyn Bridge was selected because it has a really wonderful, it creates a wonderful sonic effects with the sound of the traffic if you are below the bridge. All these ephemera actually say us that the intention of the artist was to invite everyone to listen in every situation, not only during his walk, not only during his lecture demonstration, because these ephemera were actually diffused as flyers. So the aim was to have a sort of also educational, if you want, aim and goal. Well, some years later, actually, also John Cage would make his first listening walk in 1971. It's not that it doesn't correspond to it, just adding. It called it Demonstration of the Sound of the Environment. And he made it in a campus of a university in the U.S., determining the path, not because of the acoustic qualities of particular spaces, but in an completely aleatory way through the itching. But also John Cage afterwards started to make this first sound listening walk. As I said before, these early experiences paved the way for sound walking practices that were canonized and theorized by the World Soundscape Project members. The World Soundscape Project, you know, is a research group that was founded by Raymond Murray Schaffer at the end of the 60s at the Simon Fraser University in Toronto, and is a research project focused
Vancouver.
On... Vancouver. What have I said?
Toronto,
no, Vancouver, c'est ça. it was a research group focused on the study and documentation of the sound of the environment, what Murray Schaeffer called soundscape, through surveys made through field recording, analysis, and also description. The group actually inaugurated a new discipline, which was an interdisciplinary discipline that was called acoustic ecology, that focused on sound from many different perspectives, from the historical one to the anthropological one, from the ecology, the ecological one, etc., etc. Well, in the context of the group, sound walking became canonized, a sort of canonized practice. used both for educational and artistic purposes. Here we have two definitions of sound walks. I will read the one by Hildegard Westerkamp, which is one of the artists who worked more with sound walk. And she says, a sound walk is any excursion whose main purpose is listening to the environment. It is exposing our ears to every sound around us, no matter where we are. So the aim was to counteract the prevalence of vision in our everyday perceptive processes, to rediscover and reactivate listening, to explore everyday reality with an aesthetic perspective. Here we have two definitions by Raymond Murray Schaeffer, who actually distinguishing between listening walks and sound walks. And they say a listening walk is simply a walk with a concentration of listening, while a sound walk is an exploration of the soundscape of a given area using a score as a guide. This may also contain ear training exercises. In order to expand the listening experience, sound making may also become an important part of a sound walk. Its purpose is to explore sounds that are related to the environment, and on the other hand, to become aware of one's own sounds, voice, footstep, in the environmental context. So, we will come back later to this distinction, and I would like just to take note of that of the two noises that Murray Schaeffer proposes in order to sound, to create sound, to produce sound in while during a sound walk, which are voice and footstep. But we will come back later to that while we will talk about sound making as a practice. Well, for Raymond Murray Schaeffer, the sound walk was mainly an educational practice, a practice of ear training, an ear training exercise. So a practice that could help us to enlighten our hearing capabilities, our listening attention, our focus on listening. But many artists started to create sound walk with aesthetic purposes. And actually not only aesthetic purposes, because Andra McCartney, who is another Canadian artist, a sound walker of the second generation of the World Soundscape Project, if you want, suggests us that during a sound walk can have different listening approach. Musical listening, subjective listening, historical listening, political listening, evocative listening. So there are many perspectives that can be activated during a sound walk. She says, group sound walks are often led by a listening guide who will suggest way of listening, including musical listening to pitches, rhythms, texture, harmonies. Subjective listening while thinking about relationship between bodily sound and their surroundings. Historical listening, in which people think of other times they and others have walked in that place or in similar places and how the present sound are similar or different. Political listening, when paying attention to which sounds are more ubiquitous, which masked, which inaudible, and who controls this sound. And evocative listening, where the listener pays attention to the related sensual association that are brought to the surface. So there are many different approaches that can be organized, that can be taken during a sound walk, according to which one of the many possible feature or level of sound we want to give emphasis. And even today, many artists continue to organize listening walk and sound walks following the vocabulary and the structure, the procedures elaborated by the World Soundscape Project. Although there are many variations, usually there is a guide who designs the route and then lead the group listening through the space. And at the end, there is usually also a group discussion around the listening experience. So for the guide who designed the route, the movement of a listener and his interaction with the space becomes a sort of mean to orchestrate an auditory experience that welcomes the randomness, the unpredictability of urban soundscape, their continuous movement. But it is also based on the contextual characters of urban sounds. So, for example, on the acoustic qualities of each place which will be traversed during the walk, but also on the functional, the social connotation of every site that will be traversed. Every area in the city have different sonic environment that, of course, are always mixing with each other, but that gives also identity to these places. Therefore, guiding the group and selecting a path becomes a sort of compositional process that takes into account the sonic patterns which are present in each location that will be traversed during the walk. I go a little bit. Here we have a completely, well, a similar, if you want, practice which comes from a completely different cultural context. Because we are in Japan with Akio Suzuki. And this project is entitled Otodate, is a minimal listening dispositive printed in urban space by the artist. It was made for the first time in 1996 for a festival in Berlin. So the first time that it was made, it was in Berlin, but then it was repeated and made in many different cities, including, well, both in Europe, in Asia, and in the United States. The title comes from two Japanese words, oto, which means sounds, and date, which is the name of the tea ceremony. A tea ceremony which is made in the open air. So it means enjoying the, it's a neologism, and it means enjoying the sounds in the open. Basically, it's a series of listening points selected by the artist for their acoustic qualities. The artist basically explore urban space with a little instrument, a wooden instrument, looking for spaces which have particularly strong effects of echo. And so it really acoustically map urban space, if you want, exploring it through sound making. And then he print these little symbols, which are a mixture between a foot and an ear. The drawing recalls both the form of the ear and the form of the foot. And leaves them in the urban space to suggest to the listener, to the public, to stop and listen to the acoustical effect and the particular soundscape that has been selected by the artist. So everything starts from a process of interaction with the environment, with the artist really playing the environment, trying to interact in acoustical terms with the environment, but then leave this footstep of his passage that the listener is invited to repeat in very free way, actually, because the listener, yes, is given a map, so he is invited to find every listening station, but he can stop as long as he want. He can select his own trajectory. So as a dispositive, this is much more open compared to the guided walk, because it leaves to the listener the choice both of the trajectory and of the time to be spent in every position. The listener can explore the space in ways which are more free and select his personal sequence. This one was in Turin, for example. So as you say, you have different architectural setting. The idea is really to find a listening position which allows you to understand the interaction between the environmental sound and the, in this case, physical structure of the city. So it's really an invitation to listen, and according to Akio Suzuki, it's really an invitation to open ourselves and our body to the listening experience. and to find new way to enlighten the listening experience. So a proposal to stop and open our senses. Here we have a verbal score, very recent, by Stephen Chase, which is an experimental musician, a very young experimental musician living in the UK. So it's a verbal score that, if you want, follow the tradition of Fluxus event score, scores for events that could be enacted directly by the public. And it's another way of prescribing a sound walk. He invites us to walk up for several yards with hands clasped firmly over ears, then back over the same ground with hands removed. So he invites us to experience a sort of auditory deprivation in order to alight our listening experience and to enlighten how much our auditory perception places us in the world and help us to orientate in the world. Here you have another listening prosthesis. If you want, there are many artists who are working on listening prosthesis. This one is by the French artist Pierre-Laurence Cassier, Schizophone. And it's a sort of headphone that with this cone both amplifies the environmental situation, but also reverses. So it, in these headphones, you hear sounds coming from the left on your right side and the opposite. So that these headphones are designed to disorient you in order to, if you want, also underline how much our auditory experience help us to place us in our environment and to orientate us. So all these projects actually aesthetically invest the contextual sound environment simply by revealing it through a sort of poetics of noticing that brings attention to the ever-changing sound events in the spaces we traverse. Paradoxically, several artists have used portable devices and media listening devices to do so. Why I say paradoxically? Well, you know, that everyone now has an iPod or... And all these mobile listening devices have been interpreted as a filter between the listener and the environment where he is. So as a way to reconfigure the dynamic between subject and shared space. So on one side, while listening to our iPod, we can superimpose our own soundtrack to the acoustic environment where we are. This allows us, if you want, to control our use or urban experience, to aestheticize and ultimately also to rewrite our experience of urban space. But this creates also a sort of auditory bubble or the superimposition of an audio space over the physical space become also an instance of privatization, because a private listening mode is transferred to the public sphere, thus reshaping the geography of public space and its meaning. So preventing us from fortuitous encounters with strangers, creating a soundtrack that we have selected for our movement in urban space. And it creates, Michael Ball calls it really an auditory bubble that isolates us from the contingency and the unpredictability of urban experience. But as I said, many artists actually use the headphone and private and portable listening device for opposite end, so to enlighten our listening experience. And this is a project which is probably one of the first one to use the headphones in this way, by Peter, the composer Peter Ablinger. The project is called Vice by Slick Headphones, and it's really a very simple project, because the piece consists of headphones connected with microphones that amplify the contextual auditory situation of the listener. So basically it's a Walkman that, rather than allowing you to listen to your own music, allow you to hear the amplified sonic environment. And as he says, what you hear with the headphones is the same as without, but the same is not the same. There is a difference, at least the difference between just being here and listening. The difference is the peace. So, again, in this case, the headphones have the same function as the stamp listen on the hand of the listener in Max Neuhaus listen performances. They ask us to enlighten our hearing, our attention on listening and on hearing, to switch from hearing to listening, from simply perceiving sounds to consciously perceive sounds. So if you want for an active listening, as this series is entitled. Or more recently, several artists have played on this difference underlined by Peter Ablinger in different ways, either by developing a mobile device to process environmental sounds in real time, or by creating free recording composition to be listened in situ. This, for example, is a project made in 2006 at the Media Lab, and it's another very simple project. It was a simple device made up of headphones, binaural microphones, and the portable digital signal processing unit that allowed you to remix in real time, that analyzes, manipulates, and replays in real time the environmental sounds. So also in this case, this device let you to listen to the soundscape in musical forms if you want. And nowadays you don't need to have a specific device because this possibility have already been absorbed by mobile apps such as RigiJ that allow you to remix contextual sound in real time. Also Locus Sonus team has created two applications for mobile phone that allow you to stream but also to mix with pure data the contextual sound environment where you are. A second possibility is the creation of free recording composition to be listened in situ, so to be listened where the recording process have taken place. So this piece, for example, was made by Francisco Lopez in Rotterdam in 2012, and it's a sound recording composition where basically there were five compositions that were created from field recording, collected in the same places as the one where the listener is invited to walk. So by replacing music with composition based on field recording, by allowing us to process the soundscape, as in the project that we see before, or simply by amplifying the soundscape, all this project force the permeability of the headphones. They break the auditory bubble described by Michael Ball. And so paradoxically, they use a private listening device to make us more aware of their environment where we are. Then the second, maybe we can make a short break. I take a little bit of...